You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I am Jeff Hayden, and our topic tonight will be selected issues in employment law. Think of it as Employment Law 101. But before I begin, I'm pleased to announce the return of Call a Lawyer Night. If you have questions for Call a Lawyer, the number that will not place you on the air is 1-800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. This will not put you on the radio. Each of the lawyers standing by to answer your legal questions off the air are longtime supporters of Call a Lawyer, including Frank Adam from Pacifica, who is a CPA, a lawyer, a real estate broker. He will answer your questions, particularly on tax law and real estate law. For estate planning, Janet Brewer, a certified specialist out of Palo Alto. Jessica Chilick from San Francisco will be standing by to answer your landlord-tenant questions. Janet Frankel also is a certified specialist from San Francisco, and Janet will be standing by to answer your family law questions. Ron Rohde of Palo Alto will be standing by for your patent law, aviation law, lemon law, BBB arbitration, and again, that's Ron Rohde of Palo Alto. Sal Timpano from San Francisco will be standing by for your landlord-tenant questions. For workers' compensation, Robert Wyman, a certified specialist, again, will be there to answer your phone calls. And again, that number to call is 1-800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. Moreover, available to take calls tomorrow in the area of bankruptcy law and debtors law. Leon Bayer, certified specialist in bankruptcy in Los Angeles, will take calls tomorrow. That's Thursday, June 28th. I'm sorry, misreading from last time. It will be Thursday, September 27th from 9 a.m. till noon at 800-477-3111. That's again 800-477-3111 for bankruptcy questions for Leon Bayer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy in Los Angeles. And we'll return to those numbers, those individuals later on in the show. But my guests in the studio tonight are three attorneys. Each are attorneys with very discreet employment law practices. Maggie Grover is a partner in Wendell, Rosen, Black, and Dean LLP in Oakland. Maggie's a 30-year attorney practicing employment law and a member of the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association. Ellen Mendelson of San Francisco. The law office of Ellen Mendelson focuses on representing public and other employees. With over 25 years' experience, Ellen is a member of the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association. And Douglas Robbins, to my right, is a partner in Wood Robbins LLP in San Francisco. Wood Robbins focuses their employment practice in three areas of employment: trade secret litigation, misclassification, that's independent contractor employee litigation, and wage and hour litigation. Douglas is a member of the board of directors of the San Mateo County Bar Association. Let me welcome each of you. Douglas, Ellen, Maggie, welcome each of you to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff.
Oh, thanks,
Jeff.
Thank
you, Jeff.
And while we may be speaking about certain specific areas you may call regarding any question for our employment lawyers, our phone number to hear right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're outside the local dialing area, that's 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And again, Maggie, Ellen, Douglas, welcome. I have lots of questions for you, but I'd like to start first with this question. What is an employee?
An employee is almost anybody who does any work for any person who pays. Under the law, an employee is a person who is suffered or permitted to work for another for wages, for pay. The default position of our courts and our labor commissioner's office is that everybody's an employee if you're working for wages.
And that really begs the difference. The question, you've heard a lot of people talk about whether someone's an employer or an independent contractor. What's the difference?
Well, an independent contractor should be somebody that's providing a service that's not normally provided by the company. For example, somebody comes in and waters the plants or provides accounting services to a major shipping company. They could be an independent contractor. But if they're providing the services, writing manifests for the shipping company, taking orders, or even acting as a receptionist, doing the core work of the shipping company, they should be classified as an employee.
And I guess the bottom line is, why is this important?
So the big reason why there's a huge fight between whether a party is a contractor or an employee is that employees have significant rights and protections in California and under federal law as well. Those protections are extensive. They include overtime protections, meaning that if you work past 40 hours in a week or more than 8 hours in a day, you get paid overtime. There's meal and rest breaks that are guaranteed in California. There's protections related to workers' compensation protection. You get unemployment insurance, or at least you're able to participate in the unemployment insurance system. There's a variety of protections, minimum wage, and the list goes on. Contractors have virtually none of those protections or benefits. So the conventional wisdom among employers is that if they can classify a worker as a contractor, they believe, and they're probably right most of the time, they believe they can save significant money by classifying that party as a contractor, not an employee.
That's often true, but people that are true independent contractors can command a higher hourly wage because the employer is not making contributions to Social Security or other benefits and isn't providing sick leave and other kinds of benefits. And many employers are realizing that what they might be saving, they're creating a huge risk for themselves. Because if a person is injured in the workplace, they will file a claim for workers' compensation benefits, and the employer could be hit with penalties and interest. The same would be true if the relationship breaks down and the worker goes to file for unemployment. Again, the employer can be hit with penalties for misclassifying that worker, interest, back contributions, grossing up from the employee's salary. So employers are taking a serious look at appropriate classifications.
And that begs the question, how does the law, how does the employer, how does the contractor slash employee, how do they determine who's an independent contractor, who's an employee? How do we sort through that?
Well, the California Supreme Court has recently issued a decision, Dynamics decision, in which it narrowed the definition of who is an independent contractor versus who isn't, and has an ABC test that it applies to make that determination. And the test says a worker is properly considered an independent contractor only if the hiring entity establishes A, that the worker is free from the control and direction of the hirer in connection with the performance of the work, both under the contract for performance of such work and in fact. B, that the worker performs work that is outside the usual course of the hiring entity's business. And C, that the worker is customarily engaged in an independently established trade, occupation, or business of the same nature as the work performed for the hiring entity. And you have to meet all of those conditions, which is it makes it very difficult, quite frankly, to ever establish somebody as an independent contractor.
Workers will often, or occasionally at least, ask to be classified as an independent contractor so that they can set their own hours and have a little more freedom in when and how their work is done. They may even enter a written agreement with the hiring entity. And the courts will look at that written agreement, and if it doesn't meet the ABC test, they'll throw it out and say, oops, you aren't properly classified as an independent contractor. You have the rights of an employee.
So I'm an employee, and I come, or a contractor, as the case may be, and I come to the realization that I may have been misclassified. What can I do?
You can go to the Department of Industrial Relations, that's the California Labor Commissioner's Office, and complain to them that you are not being correctly classified and have them review the factors related to your employment. And if you are misclassified, the Labor Commissioner can award you whatever items you should have gotten in terms of being an employee. Let's say you're an independent contractor who was working for less than minimum wage. You are entitled to be correctly paid minimum wage as an employee. And if you're not, if you're not an independent contractor and aren't an employee, then you should be earning at least minimum wage for all your work.
It sounds as though if I'm an employer and I choose to designate someone as an independent contractor, there may be some risk involved. What happens? What kind of risk am I running?
Sure. There is significant risk if you as an employer misclassify your employees. If you misclassify, then you were, as an employer, you didn't provide meal breaks and rest breaks because you thought or believed, either correctly or incorrectly, that person was a contractor who didn't get meal breaks and rest breaks. You probably weren't paying overtime. You didn't pay, you didn't buy workers' compensation insurance, and maybe this person got hurt on the job, and now you're, if you're the employer, you're on the hook for that injury. Unemployment insurance, and the list of potential wage and hour claims go on. Now, there are also penalties in addition to actual damages that you can get if you're an employee, and you will have to pay for an employer. And those penalties, for example, in the realm of wage and hour, if you fail to pay for overtime, you have to pay an additional you have to pay for that overtime plus penalties. If you fail to give rest and meal breaks, you have to pay an additional hour per day per penalty for meal and rest and for every single day the violation occurs. So if you're an employer, these penalties can stack up quickly.
One of the biggest problems that employers face in these cases is they classified a worker as an independent contractor, and they are not keeping any kind of hours record of the hours actually worked. And the California courts have said it is the employer's obligation to keep those records. And if the employer fails in its obligation, then the employee can come forward with whatever proof they have. And sometimes employees will have diaries that they've actually recorded time in. Other times, employees will be acting entirely on their recollection. I usually worked 3 10-hour days. Well, if they'd been an employee, the employer would have spread that out over the entire week. But if they work 3 10-hour days, they're entitled to 6 hours of overtime for that week.
And the other penalties, some of these statutes indicate that violation of the statute is a misdemeanor. 6 months in the county jail or a $1,000 fine.
Now you're talking my world. David from Berkeley, you've been holding. We'll be with you in just a moment. I do want to remind everybody, this is Call a Lawyer Night. We have lawyers standing by for your questions. We have Frank Adam from Pacifica to speak about tax and real estate. Janet Brewer, certified specialist, to speak about estate planning. Jessica Chilek, landlord-tenant law. Janet Frankel, certified specialist, family law. Ron Rohde from Palo Alto, patent law, aviation law, lemon law. Arbitration. Sal Timpano from San Francisco for landlord-tenant. Workers' compensation. Robert Wyman, a certified specialist, also from San Francisco. For the attorney standing by in that room, the number to call is 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. It is Pledge Week. We'll be back in just a moment. I stand corrected. The earlier message about tonight, do use the donate button. But we are not going to be pitching that any further tonight. So you are free to call us here in the studio. Our number here in the studio is 800. For those who can't hear the voice in my head, our number in the studio is either 415-841-4134 or 866-798-8255. And again, Doug, Ellen, Maggie are all here to answer your employment questions. David from Berkeley, you're on your legal rights.
Yes, thank you very much for your program and for the opportunity to ask this question. Under California law, does an employer have a legal obligation to provide a wage statement for their employees for each pay period? And if the answer is yes, is it sufficient for the employer to provide the wage statement only in electronic form? I can give you as many details as you'd like about my specific situation, but let me pose that question in the most general sense first.
So the California Labor Code does require an employer to provide a wage statement with each payment. And there are, I believe, 8 different requirements about the information that has to be on the wage statement: the hours worked, the base rate, the overtime rate, the hours at each of those, any deductions, the employer's name, the employee's name. All of those have to be reflected on the statement. The employer can provide those in only electronic form if that's going to satisfy the statute.
So in the case of an employee who, by virtue of medical or other reasons, does not use a computer or does not have access to online information, is there any provision that requires the employer to provide that information in hard copy, i.e. on paper?
I'm not familiar with anything that would require, and I suppose you could use some kind of accommodation request to ask your employer to provide a hard copy. And if it's available electronically, it would seem to me that your employer could print it out, or that you could print it out at the employer's, and that there's some kind of access, that it's available somehow. But I suppose you could make an accommodation request.
If there is a medical need to have a hard copy, I think that that would certainly be a reasonable accommodation to provide a hard copy. So you could ask if you've got a human resources professional in your work environment or your supervisor, you could ask for them to access it on your behalf and then print it out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Under topic tonight, Employment Law 101. My guest in the studio tonight, 3 attorneys with very different employment law practices. Ellen Mendelson of San Francisco has been a longtime supporter of Your Legal Rights and a frequent participant in Call a Lawyer Night. The law offices of Ellen A. Mendelson focuses on representing public and other employees. With over 25 years' experience, Ellen's a member of the Labor and Employment Section of the California Lawyers Association. Douglas Robbins, partner in Wood Robbins LLP in San Francisco. Wood Robbins focuses their employment law practice in 3 areas of employment litigation: trade secrets litigation, misclassification, which we've just been speaking of, and wage and hour litigation. Douglas is a member of the board of directors of the San Mateo County Bar Association. Maggie Grover is a partner at the firm of Wendell Rosen Black and Dean LLP in Oakland. Maggie's a 30-year attorney practicing employment law and a member of the Labor and Employment Section of the California Lawyers Association. And again, while we may be speaking of specific areas within employment law, you can call regarding any question for our employment lawyers. Our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of the local dialing area, please call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. John from Oakland, you're on your legal rights.
Hi, thanks for having me. I have a quick question. I run a small nonprofit. We don't have enough budget to have a full-time employee. However, I am the executive director, and I am classified as an independent contractor because I only work about 60% of the time. And again, like I said, we have a small-time budget. Could we get in trouble or penalized for me serving as kind of the fundamental services to the organization, but being an independent contractor?
So the answer is your organization could get in trouble when you sue them because they treated you like a contractor, not an employee. If your question is if there's some sort of other supra-regulatory body, like a criminal, like the police, like the misclassification police, effectively there's nothing like that. The system is reliant upon people like yourself coming forward. You haven't really filled out the facts, but it sounds like you work 60% of the time. It sounds like you're probably on site. You're working for this employer. And so what few facts you have provided suggest that under the Dynamex or Dynamics test, the ABC test, you're certainly going to be classified as an employee unless you provide additional facts to us that show how you don't meet any of the A or the B or the C criteria.
I would, if this was my client, I would suggest that you look at reclassifying the position into one of an employee, because as you get more formalized and as you grow, which maybe you will or maybe you won't, but it's good to have a base when you only have one person or two people and have the laws be followed and everybody be correctly classified.
Right. Thank you very much. That was very helpful.
John, thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. We have another caller that's working its way to us, but one thing that I've been curious about and that I've had a call from another caller earlier tonight about is whether some union protections apply to public employees or private employees who are not themselves members of the union. One lady called. She works for a government entity. She thinks that the union representing many of her coworkers are about to go on strike. What are her rights? How safe is it for her to cross the picket line? Or similarly, if she can't cross the picket line, how protected is she?
That's a good question, quite frankly. If she crosses the picket line, that's up to her. Is she protected from retaliation by coworkers? I don't believe so. If she decides not to cross the picket line, the strike fund is not going. If she's not a member, the strike fund is not going to provide her income, which is what unions do to striking members. They support it. In terms of her protection, I don't think she has any.
I guess one of the things that she's concerned about is the possibility that union people a little further up the ladder might retaliate when they come back for her not participating. Is she protected against that?
That's a good question. Who would she complain to? And she'd have to go up the ladder. How would she... And I suppose if she could establish a nexus between
I guess she could take the position that her striking or not striking is an exercise of her First Amendment rights, which government employees have some protections for exercising First Amendment rights in the workplace. Private employees don't have that same protection, but government employees do. And if she took the position that she was being retaliated against for exercising those rights, do you think that would give her protection?
She would have to prove that a policymaker was retaliating against her, and I don't – how could she – if it's a union person, that's not a policymaker. I don't see – what the First Amendment protects against is government action, And if union members are retaliating her for being a scab, that's a harsh maybe characterization. But I don't think we have policy by policymakers there.
The safest course is you probably don't want to be the sole person who is the union member in a non-union environment, but similarly, you probably don't want to be the only one who's bucking the trend and trying to ride with them and get those benefits and not pay the dues. You should really...
Well, there actually has been some recent activity, both in terms of a case and some legislation, because public employees used to be tasked with kind of a Me Too fee if they didn't join the union, and a court decision recently determined that that was not appropriate, and the California legislature passed a law saying that the employees cannot go back against the unions for their past contributions of these Me Too fees. If they want to join the union can charge them dues, but the union can't take the position as it had that we're giving you benefits just by being in the union, so you have to pay these Me Too fees.
Terrence from Santa Clara will be with you in just a moment. Once again, I'm glad to remind everyone, it's Call a Lawyer Night. If you have questions for Call a Lawyer, our lawyer is standing by. The number that will not place you on the air is 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. You won't be on the radio, and each of the lawyers standing by to answer your legal questions off the air are longtime supporters of Call a Lawyer, including Janet Brewer, Certified Specialist in Estate Planning; Jessica Chilek, Landlord-Tenant Law; Janet Frankel, Certified Specialist in Family Law; Frank Adam, Real Estate Broker, Attorney, CPA, to talk to you about tax law, real estate law; Ron Rohde, Patent Law, Aviation Law, Lemon Law, Arbitration; Sal Timpano, Landlord-Tenant; and Robert Wyman, Certified Specialist in Workers' Compensation. And again, that number is 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. Moreover, available to take your calls tomorrow in the areas of bankruptcy or debtors' rights, call Leon Baer, Certified Specialist in Bankruptcy. He will take calls tomorrow, Thursday, that's September 27th, from 9 a.m. until noon, at 800-477-3111. Again, 800-477-3111. If you don't get through, leave a message. Let them know you are calling for Call a Lawyer. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
Terrence from Santa Clara, thank you for your patience. You are on Your Legal Rights.
Why, thank you very much. Hi, I was hoping you guys could touch on the ins and outs of undocumented workers, including the exact definition itself, the dangers of doing it and such. I have a friend who owns a restaurant, and he has a lot of undocumented workers, and he did it at first when he first opened because he stated he just simply couldn't afford to pay minimum wage, and that once he started to, you know, progress and do well, that he go ahead and do everything by the book. But later on, he decided that he was saving so much money with these undocumented workers, he continued on, and now it's been 3 years. And I was just wondering, I mean, he seems to be winning on all ends, and so I was wondering, what are the ins and outs of that? And that includes documented workers that have agreed, for whatever reason, to getting paid under the table. Could you please touch on that, please, the ins and outs and the legalities of it?
Yeah. Undocumented workers are covered by the California Labor Code, so that if an undocumented worker goes to the labor commissioner and files a complaint, the labor commissioner is not going to ask whether you're entitled to work here. That's not an issue they're going to pursue.
In fact, the deputy labor commissioners will often look squarely at the employer and say, I'm not going to listen to any information about whether these people who are making the complaint against you are lawfully able to work for you. You employed them and you owe them at least minimum wage. So some of the problems with under-the-table work, you're not paying taxes and you could be asked to gross up and pay the taxes. If somebody is injured and you're not paying for workers' compensation, you could be liable for all of their injuries. If you fire them, you could be liable for back contributions and penalties that you haven't made. And if somebody complains and the feds come in, you can have significant penalties for each worker who is not properly documented. And that really just means they don't have the paperwork to demonstrate that they are legally able to work in the United States.
Terrence, I'm not myself. This is Jeff, and I am not an employment lawyer. I am a criminal defense lawyer. And one thing that you might consider in addition to that that my guests have been describing is I have personally represented people who misrepresented the wages they were paying out, whether they had employees or not, for purposes of saving on workers' comp. That is a white-collar crime and carries significant penalties. And it was a major fight to get such a person out of felony land and into misdemeanor land and ultimately to a position where they wouldn't do any jail time. But that's something else that your friend may be playing with and to keep in mind.
How is it they can get away with doing this for 3 years?
Tell us the name of the restaurant. He probably wouldn't. I do not recommend that. I do not recommend that.
I think the way that they can get away with it is a couple of things. California's economy doesn't have enough people who are willing to take these low-earner jobs, and we do have a lot of people who do not have the proper paperwork to work in California, and they are desperate to have some kind of income. And there, many of them are sending money back to their families in their home countries.
One thing to remember is people that come here from other places are used to conditions that we would not consider livable in those other places. So they will tolerate things that the rest of us tend not to.
Okay, that makes absolute sense. Definitely don't agree with it, but yeah. It hurts our economy, but okay, thank you so much for the clarification.
Terrence, thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights.
Bye-bye.
And once again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. Our topic tonight, Employment Law 101. My guests in the studio tonight are three attorneys with very discreet employment law practices. Douglas Robbins is a partner in Wood Robbins in San Francisco. Wood Robbins focuses their employment law practice in three areas of employment litigation: trade secret litigation, misclassification, which is what we've been speaking of, and wage and hour litigation. Douglas is a member of the board of directors of the San Mateo County Bar Association. Maggie Grover is a partner at the firm of Wendell, Rosen, Black, and Dean in Oakland. Maggie's a 30-year attorney practicing employment law and is a member of the Labor and Employment Section of the California Lawyers Association. And Ellen Mendelson from San Francisco, a longtime supporter of Your Legal Rights and of the Call a Lawyer program. The law offices of Ellen A. Mendelson focuses on representing public and other employees. With over 25 years' experience, Ellen is a member of the Labor and Employment Section of the California Lawyers Association. If you have questions for my guests, and it can be in any area of employment law, the number here is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of San Francisco, feel free to use our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. I see the phones are lighting up. One thing we touched on a while ago is that employees under some circumstances are eligible for overtime pay. And that begs the question, who is eligible for overtime? Are salaried employees eligible for overtime? I see my guests are all pointing at one another. You're all being so nice to each other and trying to give the other person a chance to step up.
So employees that are paid on a salary may or may not be entitled to overtime, because it's not whether you're paid on a salary or by an hourly basis that gives you the right to overtime. It's whether you can be classified as exempt, which means you are exempt from overtime requirements, or non-exempt. And the law construes the exemptions very narrowly. The employer has to prove that the worker is exempt. In general, it's executives, IT people, senior administrative professionals, and artistic and learned professions are the primary exemptions. If the person doesn't fall into one of those, they're entitled to overtime.
Sarah from Fremont, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I had a pretty catastrophic illness about 6 months ago. I worked for a small jurisdiction on the peninsula, and I was given the option to have a lower paying job when I returned to work after sort of miraculously the medicines for my illness made me able to work again. However, the new job that I'm working now is actually even more stressful and demanding and has more responsibility than the old job. So is there any way, even though now I've signed an agreement and I've gone along with this accommodation, quote-unquote, is there any way to, at this point, claim discrimination because of my illness?
That's really a fact-laden question, and it's going to be a very fact-driven decision. In general, an employer has to engage in a good-faith discussion with you about what an accommodation is reasonable or not. Sometimes reclassification of a position or giving you a different position with different levels of work or stress or different physical environment is an appropriate accommodation, and sometimes it's not.
How long were you out, Sarah?
For a few months, but it was covered by my medical leave, so I wasn't out on any unpaid status.
Were you out more than 12 weeks?
Yes.
If you're out more than 12 weeks, you're running up against issues. Are you a union member? Are you a
no?
There's not a unionized workforce for your jurisdiction?
Not for my particular employee group.
Okay. And if you're out more than 12 weeks, you essentially lose protection of, and did you leave with some kind of an accommodation request that they gave you leave and you were out for more than 12 weeks and then sought to come back?
Yes, everything was done through either FMLA or with a particular special approval. All was done with, proper paperwork, everything done with both sides agreeing. The accommodation turns out to be almost like a demotion. That's the thing.
Did your pay change?
Yes, significantly.
Mm-hmm. And you were out more than 12 weeks?
Yes.
Well, once you're out more than 12 weeks, and you're kind of, and that's your protected time is 12 weeks, unless we have something, maybe a personnel manual that has language that says employees of this jurisdiction can be out, will save your job for a year, but and the document you signed changing jobs, and that's a problem too, because that's essentially, although it's not, it really can't be a contract, because public employees hold their jobs by statute, not by contract. But even so, to go back on that, I think you're in trouble. And especially being out more than 12 weeks, they really didn't have to assign you another job. They could have said, look, I'm sorry, you've been out more than 12 weeks and we're done.
I would differ with you on that conclusion, because I think under both state and federal law, you could ask for additional time off as a disability accommodation. And the employer would have to demonstrate that giving you the additional time off created an undue burden, which is a really elastic standard, and it looks at all of the facts of the circumstances at the time. And so it sounds to me like what happened was the employer looked at it and said, well, keeping your job is going to be a burden, and we'd like to offer you something else. But I don't know without looking at all the facts, and I don't think we really can dig into that many facts on the air.
I agree.
Sure. Agreed. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Once again, tonight is Call a Lawyer night. If you have questions for Call a Lawyer, the attorneys are standing by, and this will not place you on the radio. Each of the lawyers standing by, and they are standing by at 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. They're standing by. You won't be on the radio. We have tonight Frank Adam to speak about tax law, real estate law, Janet Brewer, certified specialist in estate planning, Jessica Chalik, landlord-tenant law, Janet Frankel, family law, certified specialist, Ron Rohde, patent law, aviation law, lemon law, arbitration, Sal Timpano, landlord-tenant law, and Robert Wyman, certified specialist in workers' compensation. And again, that number to call is 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. If your question relates to bankruptcy, certified specialist in bankruptcy law, Leon Baer is available to answer your calls tomorrow, Thursday, September 27th, from 9 a.m. till noon at 800-477-3111. That's 800-477-3111. Tell him you're calling from Call a Lawyer. Tara from Daly City, you're on Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Nowadays when you buy takeout food and when you pay for it with the credit card prompts you sometimes, but you want to put in a tip. And I thought that was a great thing for workers, so I found out that a certain employer, a chain in Daly City, and it's a national chain, was
Chair, we're having a bit of trouble with your cellular phone. It sounds like it's breaking up. We got some of that. Can you try to repeat that again? Tara, please feel free to call us back. We are more than happy to take your call. And again, our number is 415-841-4134 or 866-798-8255. I see that there's another call on its way to us, but we were talking about who's eligible for overtime. What state agency remedies overtime violations?
The Department of Industrial Relations, the Labor Commissioner's Office, just is the agency that handles both misclassification of independent contractors and overtime issues.
And are they located up in Sacramento, or are they spread out throughout the area?
There's a Labor Commissioner's Office in every major metropolitan area. There's Oakland. There's San Francisco.
There's one in San Jose. There's one in Santa Rosa. So that you don't have to go very far to get information. And the receptionist and the clerks there are very knowledgeable in terms of helping you fill out the basic forms. And once you get in, the deputy labor commissioners will give you additional information. They have lovely handouts in multiple languages as well.
Yes, and you don't need a lawyer to go to the Department of Industrial Relations, to the Labor Commissioner's Office. They are very, very employee-friendly and will help you. And you can go and they will explain the forms and how, you know, the information they need. And then you file the form, and then 30 days later, they send a notice to the employer saying there's been a complaint, and employer, how do you respond to this? And then the employer either submits a response or doesn't, and then there's a claim conference. It's called a claim conference.
Claim and conference.
Yes. Yeah. And at that, the employer and the employee and a representative of the labor commissioner meet and look at the documents and the claims and then determine whether to send it to hearing or try to settle the case.
And the deputy labor commissioners can be very helpful in getting the cases settled. They'll look at the employer and say, it looks like you have some exposure here. They can look at the employee and say, well, hey, you filled out a time card every day that says you took a meal break. Why are you claiming that you didn't get to take a meal break? And so they will give both parties an explanation of their rights and potential exposure and help you resolve the case at that time. If you don't, then they set it for a formal hearing where you bring in the documents and you are put under oath and testify.
Tara from Daly City, are you back?
Ken.
Tara will be with you momentarily. Ken from Berkeley, you're on Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hi. I'm not employed myself, being retired, but after hearing the discussion in the first half of the program, I was curious about what the current status is in terms of the question of employee versus contractor for all the drivers for the ride-sharing services these days.
Do you want to field that one?
So there is litigation going, and I understand that there was a major settlement entered by one of the ride-sharing services today. The ride-sharing services have taken the position that the drivers, that they don't provide actually driving services or ride services, but they provide software that allow the customers to connect with the drivers. And that's how they have approached it, saying, we're not providing rides, so therefore they're not part of our central business. With the Dynamics case in California, I don't know how that was going to stand up. Northern District of California had certified a class. The Ninth Circuit decertified the class, which means that they could not bring the claims as a group, and we're going to have to go individually to arbitrate their claims. And that just happened yesterday. So it's an unfolding scenario.
Okay, well, I'll continue to pay attention. Thanks.
Thank you, Ken. And Tara from Daly City, welcome back. You're in Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you. Recently, I was purchasing takeout food in Daly City at a national chain, and when I paid with my credit card, I was prompted whether to add a tip. The workers there told me that that employer advances them the tip and then takes it out of their check later. That seems like wage theft to me, and I'm wondering how widespread that is, because as a customer, I think I'm tipping someone. I'm actually not.
Who would like to field that one? Douglas?
Okay.
Maggie.
I guess I will. There were employers, and I don't know that there still are employers, that would say, well, if the customer is paying by a credit card, we have a fee that we pay for all of the costs charged on the credit card, including your tip, and we will therefore reduce your tip by that fee. And the California court said, you cannot do that. If a customer says that an employee gets a $10 tip, the employee needs to get the full $10. I don't know if all of the restaurants have had that information filtered down to them, but that case was at least 3 or 4 years ago.
My understanding is that the entire tip is taken out of their check later on.
Sounds really weird to me.
So who would I go to? Because I'm against wage theft.
Well, I think that the employee is going to have to enforce their own rights, and they could go to the labor commissioner, the Division of Labor Standards Enforcement. They could just go to their employer and say, hey, this is not right, but I would suggest that they would want to do it as a group rather than individuals.
I'm concerned that this may be widespread, and as a customer, I think I'm tipping someone, and I'm not.
I don't think it's, as far as widespread, I'm not inclined to think it's widespread. I may be wrong. As a third party, though, you don't have standing to make a complaint anywhere, and you're not damaged personally.
There are laws that allow tip sharing, so that if the individual who waits on you can be compelled to share their tips with other people that also provide services. They can't be compelled to share tips with the management at all, even if the management provides services. And there have been some recent decisions on whether they can be compelled to provide tip sharing with back of the house. And I don't know that that's a settled answer yet.
It doesn't sound like she's talking about back of the house. Yeah. She's talking about management. This whole standing question is interesting, though, because it is true that perhaps the caller doesn't have standing. But this question and the previous question about the restaurateur who was hiring these undocumented workers, this is an issue that doesn't just impact employees. It does impact employees, but it also impacts the rest of us in the economy. It impacts other people who want to be employees, and more significantly, it impacts the competitors to those employers.
Right.
There's a claim called 17200 in California. It's basically an unfair competition claim that other competing employers, other restaurants, could arguably bring against the restaurant who's violating the employee statutory the employment law statutes, arguing that, look, I'm trying to compete with you, but you competing restaurant, you're hiring undocumented workers, which means that your costs are lower and I can't compete with your lower costs. You charge less for your food. All the workers go to the competitors. That's unfair to me. Similarly, with the tip sharing issue, here, arguably, the employer can lower their costs and sell their food for a lower amount, for less. A competitor can't compete because this this other restaurant is violating the wage rules in California. So who has standing? Maybe competitors to the restaurant.
And there are several law firms out there that work almost exclusively with minimum wage or very low wage earners and do have a desire to correct these things. So if you can if the wait staff can find one of those law firms, they could get a lot of help there and some good direction.
I should also make a quick pitch for PAGA. So PAGA is kind of an esoteric but beautiful little statute in California. It's the Private Attorney General Act. My take on PAGA is that if you're bringing an action in California and you can't certify, chances are you can invoke PAGA pretty easily to the same effect. It's sort of a default class action for people who can't get class action status.
And employers are afraid of it.
Tara, I hope that helped answer your question, and thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. I'll be heading over there soon to let them know.
Thank you. And with that, we're nearing the end of the hour, and I'd like to give each of you a minute or so for any last-minute thoughts you have before we close out. Ellen, would you like to go first?
Yes. I think that if people feel that they're being unfairly or incorrectly classified or incorrectly paid, they should go to the Department of Industrial Relations. If you Google Department of Industrial Relations or California Labor Commissioner, you will find the office near you and go to them and see what they say. This is an available remedy. It's there for citizens of the state, non-citizens of the state, and pursue your rights.
Overall, the California employment laws are designed to protect people that work and make sure that they get paid for that work. So the statutes are protective. The administrative body is protective. If something is going wrong in your workplace, there is a remedy for you.
Douglas, take it away.
The way that I look at work is you have to ask yourself, what are we doing on the planet? What are we doing with the short time we have here? We have people who we love. We have experiences of being alive. And we have our time. And that's what work is. Work is the thing we do with our time while we're here. When employers steal employees' time because they don't pay them appropriately, because they fail to provide meal and rest breaks, because they misclassify them, they're stealing what the employee has in this world, namely their time, their energy, their life force. And so the way that I see it is as a more serious violation of who we are, who we want to be as people. These protections we have in California are special. They're especially strong because California respects the fact that employees and the work that we do, it's important. It's who we are. It expresses our autonomy, and it should be protected. So thank God we live in California. And thank God for the statutory protections we have under the labor code.
And I would just like to follow that up by saying the vast majority of California employers really do strive to follow those laws because they know that there are penalties if they don't. And they know that there's a cost to training workers and trying to keep them happy. And so they do try to follow those laws.
And with that, I thank each of you. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight has been Employment Law 101. My guests have been Maggie Grover from Wendell Rosen Black & Dean LLP in Oakland, Ellen Mendelson of the Law Offices of Ellen A. Mendelson in San Francisco, California, and Douglas Robbins from the firm of Wood Robbins LLP, also in San Francisco. I'd like to thank each of you for joining us. We've also been running our Call a Lawyer Night tonight, and I would like to express our thanks to the lawyers who have been taking your calls off the air. That's Frank Adam of Pacifica answering your questions about tax law and real estate. In estate planning, Janet Brewer of Palo Alto. In landlord-tenant law, we have both Jessica Chilik and Sal Timpano, both from San Francisco. In family law, Janet Frankel of San Francisco. In patent law, aviation law, lemon law, arbitration, Ronald Rohde of Palo Alto. And in workers' compensation law, Robert Wyman of San Francisco. And taking your calls tomorrow is Leon Baer. I'd like to thank each and every one of you for participating and for supporting Call a Lawyer. We'll be back next week with Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. Our thanks to you for listening. To our production assistant, Martin McLean, and at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.